If you're unpacking developmental needs, behavioral challenges, if you're being honest, it can be an uncomfortable conversation. It can be an uncomfortable discussion, particularly if that individual hasn't had much coaching in their career. Initially, that can be quite difficult. And so it's very easy to move in a one-to-one straight to business delivery and leave the development to when you have more time. So I try to ensure that each one-to-one we start religiously with coaching and well-being.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody. This is Ben Morton, and welcome to episode 42 of the podcast. In this episode, we are joined by Teg Desange, who is the Director of Connected Services and Technology at Samsung Electronics UK, a role he has held since 2016. Prior to that, Teg has 20 years experience in the telecoms industry, having held senior roles with brands such as Telefonica O2, HTC and Vodafone. He has significant expertise in developing successful business strategy, commercial partner management and cross-category innovation. But that's not why I was so keen to have Teg join us on the show today. I've had the privilege of working with Teg, some of his peers, and his direct team over the past few years, and I've been continually struck by his commitment to developing and coaching those that he leads. Having experienced the good, the bad, and the ugly of leadership himself, Teg has modelled and shaped himself into a truly developmental leader, one who integrates the skills of a coach into his day-to-day leadership and management style. By his own admission, he sets very high standards for his team and has very high expectations of them. But he also works very hard to support, coach, and mentor them. In this episode, we really get down and into the weeds of why he's adopted this approach, how he developed the skills he needed, and what this looks like on a very practical day-to-day basis. What is it he's actually doing? When, on what frequency? We answer all of those questions. I know that you're going to get massive value from this conversation, but please do also make sure you stay tuned right to the very end of the episode, as two of my former guests, Dr. Vicky Barnes and Carola Becker, have got an exclusive offer for you for their retreats in Colorado. So, without any further delay or hesitation, let's dive right in and please enjoy this conversation with Teg Desange. Teg, a very warm welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you with us today. And first of all, let me just ask, how are you? How are you doing today?
I'm very good. Thank you, Ben. I'm very good. It's my first day back in the office for a number of weeks and months. And it's great to be in the office, to be honest.
And how is it in the office? Are there people in? Is there kind of some energy about the place? How does it feel? Because that's probably something many of us are starting to ponder and think about, right? What's it going to be like as we hopefully start to go back to the workplace? And what's your initial experience been?
Well, we're lucky enough at Samsung. We've just moved to a new office, actually, over the interim. It's a fresh new environment. We're only up about 10% of capacity, I would suggest. But there is a definite positive energy, you know, and it reflects in terms of my own personal energy and what we're doing in the office. So, there is a definitive benefit in being back in the environment, particularly for today.
Good to hear. Teg, can I start off by asking the question I ask all guests as soon as they come on the show, which is really the context question, I guess. So would you mind just sharing a bit of an overview or take us through your career journey that's got you to where you are today, and indeed tell us what the current role is?
Yeah, absolutely. So even though I don't look old enough, Ben, I have been in the mobile industry for more than 20 years. And I started off as a software engineer in a Japanese company, NEC, in their R&D division. But then it soon transpired that there were much better engineers than me. And where my strength lay was in conveying some rather complex messages and issues to senior managers in a very simple and easy way to kind of comprehend. So I was plucked within 12 months of my engineering career into kind of a management stream, managing engineers and teams of engineers. I then went on from NEC to O2, and I joined O2 in what I call my formative part of my career. So it was around my mid-20s to my early 30s. And that was when I think I was most receptive and most in need of personal development and most impactful, if you like, in terms of an environment that has on my career. And I was lucky enough in my time at O2 to work with some really talented leaders, you know, and as an environment, O2 really forced a duty of development and coaching, you know, that was really instilled in me and my colleagues. And it was early on at O2 that I got some great advice from one of my leaders and one of my mentors, who said, you know, at the age that I was at, and this is around when I was 27, 28, was to just broaden and vary my experience as much as possible. You know, being in a big corporate enabled me to kind of go from being a buyer and a partnership manager to managing CapEx and OpEx for the business, and then even going into enterprise sales. So that was great. It really broadened and developed me. And then I kind of realized, well, I need to continue that journey. I really need to throw myself into a completely different environment. So that's when I left and joined HTC, which was a fantastic mobile brand at that time. And that was a very different culture. Again, very talented individuals, but much more startup-esque, you know, very, very much around short-term, very different to the kind of the corporate culture that I was used to. And in the last year I was at HTC, I headed up the UK across all the relevant business functions, which was an incredible experience to work across marketing and finance and sales and all those different areas of a business of that size was a phenomenal experience at the age of 35. And then I was lucky enough to join Vodafone as the commercial lead of all mobile hardware. It was in a role that Vodafone defined as a hybrid role. And that effectively meant that I was reporting into the UK and Vodafone Group. And again, that had a significant impact on me personally, because although I'd worked with many other cultures in other group roles before, I learned more about influencing and persuading and also compromising across cultures more in that role than I ever had done in my career before. You know, Vodafone was in 27 different countries, and the group of colleagues that I worked with represented each of those different regions. And that was a fantastic experience. And then if we cut to where I am now, well, 5 years ago, I joined Samsung UK and Ireland. I'm currently the Director of Connected Services and Technology for the UK and Ireland. And effectively what that means is I'm responsible for creating the business and consumer value from all of our partners, so from our platforms like Samsung Pay and Health and Smart Things, which is our IoT platform, but also the commercialization of our mobile hardware. So it's a very broad role. It's seven different business areas. And I think that career journey that I've been on, that breadth of experience and all those different environments were absolutely essential for me to be successful in what I'm doing right now. You know, I lean on those experiences on a daily basis.
So, Teg, I'm really fascinated to dive into what you've just said a little bit there in terms of, so you've had this really broad and varied career. You said early on some of your advice was to stay broad and get some different experiences, and you've worked in lots of different cultures. How would you say all of that has sort of shaped your leadership and management style, and how would you say it's changed or evolved throughout that time?
Initially, if I look back at my early leadership style, I think I still am, actually, to be open, Ben. I'm very demanding. I'm very results driven. I think that all the individuals in my team that have ever worked with me would recognize the fact that I am results driven. But I think over the kind of the latter half, if you like, of that period, the importance of coaching and the impact of coaching to get those results has become much more significant for me. And so over the years, I've consciously developed that part of my leadership. Now, initially being focused on efficiency and what I would call kind of task-based delivery. And most of my discussions were centered in my one-to-ones or in my engagement with the people that were working with me around problem resolutions and in updates on where they were on their deliverables. While I recognized, you know, different individuals had different styles and approaches, I wasn't consciously adapting my approach based on what that individual needed or the way to get the best out of that individual. So it's not to say I was a bad manager, hopefully not a bad manager, but I was a very effective manager and one particularly focused on business perspective, but I didn't invest enough personal energy and thought into adapting my style and recognizing where people are on their journeys. So now I think I've, you know, when challenges occur, when there are challenges in terms of kind of delivery and a business achievement, today I reflect on what led to that circumstance or that challenge before I feed back or discuss with that individual team member. Now, trying to reflect on what was that individual's thought process? Was there a communication challenge, whether that's me or others within the team? What support could they have been given or asked for or needed? Because pointing out what could have gone better to a team member is easy, but providing context and unpacking that with the team member for their individual learnings from that experience is much harder, but far, far more valuable. So it takes time and energy from you both to try and pinpoint and most crucially to align on the honest personal reflections of those kind of challenges, but it most definitely enables a more favorable outcome. So I think that's probably been the biggest change and development, if you like, in my approach.
I'm really curious as well just to hear how you would describe coaching or the process of coaching in terms of working one-on-one with your sort of team members and direct reports on that, because I think it's a word that gets used a lot in business, right? Kind of coaching and mentoring are often used quite interchangeably, but they're also words that I think people can have completely different understanding around what they actually mean. So when you talk about coaching your team members, like what does that look like in practice for you? Kind of what are you doing? What are you not doing? Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think a key reflection here, Ben, is the fact that if you're unpacking developmental needs, behavioral challenges, if you're being honest, both as a leader, but also as a team member, it can be an uncomfortable conversation. It can be an uncomfortable discussion, particularly if that individual hasn't had much coaching in their career. You know, when you start to unpack these kind of challenges and developmental needs, initially that can be quite difficult. And so it's about adaption of style. It's very much around investment of personal energy in terms of making sure those discussions happen in the right way. So for me, I think it's very easy to move in a one-to-one straight to business delivery and leave the development to when you have more time. So I try to ensure that each one-to-one we start religiously with coaching and well-being. You know, depending on what there is to discuss that week, and some weeks it might only be 5 minutes and some weeks it could be 40 minutes, but generally 10 to 15 minutes at the start of every one-to-one, it's around the coaching and the development and obviously that individual's well-being. And looking at the two or three development areas that we've been working on and talk about those. You know, how are we getting on? Are there any new reference points, positive and negative, in terms of instances that relate to those development areas? I consciously make an effort throughout my week or the time between the one-to-ones to capture any observations, again, positive and developmental needs, to integrate into my next one-to-one discussion with that individual. So it's there with kind of clear reference points. And at the one-to-ones, I take electronic notes and then I circulate those notes afterwards. And that, for me, that is absolutely essential because it helps with alignment, if you like, in terms of understanding exactly what we talked to, what we concluded, and what we said we were going to kind of move into. But it really helps with kind of providing consistency of scope because it helps ensure that you stay focused on those development areas that you've identified. You know, it's not helpful to move and shift focus repeatedly. It's much more beneficial in a coaching practice to work on those two or three particular areas until you're both comfortable that you've made sufficient progress or there's not a need to kind of focus on that area anymore. And I think related to that, I often find that people think that the development journey should be linear. You know, they adopted a different approach where they've got a different positive outcome and therefore tick, you know, done. I've addressed this. You pointed this issue out for me. I've now exhibited the fact that I have that under control. But in reality, they and you as an individual will have good days and bad days on adapting and changing your behavior. And that can depend on personal energy, that can depend on workload and what else you've got going on in your life in and outside of work. So I think it's really important that kind of consistency is there to jointly focus on those two or three areas that you identify and not look for an immediate resolution, but more around the consistency of adaption and exhibiting the behavior that you're both looking for.
Wow, that's great. Teg, there's like so many questions I've just scribbled down in my pad to ask you based on what you've just said. And they're all quite tactical questions that I'm sure people listening will be really, really interested in. So in no particular order, at the start just then, you mentioned how it can be quite uncomfortable. And I think you said for you and the person you're working with, when you start to adopt this style and you start to bring in more feedback and more honesty. And this sort of being uncomfortable is something that crops up a lot, especially when we're thinking about having what we often call difficult conversations. So I'm just really curious to get a sense from you. Is it a case that there has been something you've done along the way that has made those conversations more comfortable for you? Or do you think it's been the case that you've just got comfortable with the discomfort and you've just got used to it? Like, is it one of those two, or is it somewhere in between, something different?
I think it's most definitely for me, it would be the latter. It would be getting comfortable with the discomfort. But also, I guess, linked to that in terms of, you know, the part of that process of becoming comfortable with that discomfort, around recognizing the fact that the end game, the reason you're having that discussion, the reason you're being challenging, the reason that you're potentially making that individual reflect on some of their development needs, even if it's uncomfortable, is in their interest.
Yeah.
You know, it's about reminding yourself of the fact that you're helping that individual become better and more effective and hopefully more capable and more satisfied and happy in their job. That's the reward, if you like. That's the payload for those uncomfortable discussions. So I think as soon as you start to recognize those outputs, it's much easier to become comfortable with that discomfort and ensuring that you have those direct, clear, honest discussions in the right way.
Quick one for you, and please excuse me interrupting my own podcast, but I just wanted to jump in and say that if you're enjoying this episode, then do also check out episode 65 with Meredith Bell, who is a listening expert, and you can hear her talking about how to be a better listener, which is a key skill for us as coaches or leader coaches. I'll put the link to that episode in the show notes so you can click on that next. But I'll leave you to get back to this episode with Teg. And this next question, you've probably in part just answered it, but if we carry on this theme of the things being slightly uncomfortable or different, and thinking about those that you lead now, I think potentially a slightly sad truth that the approach that you take, really focusing on coaching those that you lead and sort of challenging them and supporting them, it's probably an approach that isn't that familiar to many people at work, or it's not that common. So I'm just wondering, like, is there anything in particular that you do or have done to help those that you lead sort of adapt to your new style? I think a lot of people at work can still operate in a bit of a feedback vacuum, right? Other than maybe once or twice a year when they get their annual and mid-year review. So I'm just wondering, any particular things you've done to help those that you lead kind of adapt to your style?
I try to encourage, first of all, the objective, if you like, in terms of what we're aiming for. So firstly, recognizing the fact that this is what great looks like, this is what the measure of success is. And then unpacking, you know, so where they are on that journey in terms of, was the outcome that is with that particular reference point, how far and what's the gap, if you like, in terms of that reference point. And then the behaviors that they exhibited, and almost kind of giving them the opportunity, if you like, to reflect in a third person on what led to that, and what would the advice that they would give if they were reflecting and feeding back to an individual who went through that experience, as opposed to it being just very personal and very individual to them. So I think that helps in terms of giving yourself permission, both as an individual, but also as a leader, to be a bit more analytical about that circumstance, and without all of that emotional attachment and baggage that goes into that. I think at the end of every one of those kind of discussions, or at the end of every one of those parts of it, if you like, of that discussion, those coaching reflections, I encourage them to kind of tell me if it's fair. You know, if you, there's nothing worse, and I've been in that circumstance where it's a one-way communication. And so having the ability to have that kind of two-way, to say, well, look, those are my thoughts, this is what I think, and inviting that individual to share their thoughts all the way through. But even when you've concluded at the end, to say, is that fair? Do you feel like we're aligned? Do you think that, you know, we are both clear in terms of what we're trying to achieve? Is that a beneficial conversation to you? And then the final point for me would be, I have a number of internal thinkers in my team, and external thinkers are much more able to reflect immediately in that discussion. To, you know, when you ask them if something's fair, they're able to give you feedback. You're far more able to have a kind of a dialogue and discuss and refine the discussion and the objectives. But internal, you know, thinkers, they want to reflect. They want time to digest. They want time to kind of think about what you've discussed. And so in those circumstances, I've always, I know who those individuals are. I, again, about adapting my approach in terms of coaching, I recognize who they are within my team. And so, as well as giving the opportunity to kind of share at that time to say, is that fair? I will always make a commitment to say, I will call you later today, or you're welcome to call me at these times or whenever's convenient for you. And let's discuss and reflect after you've had an opportunity to digest. And that's so important, because unless the individual and the team member feels like they are part of the journey, they're part of the discussion, then you don't get the buy-in, and as a result, you won't get the effectiveness of the discussions and what you're trying to do.
And what about frequency, Ted? Do you have a standard sort of routine and schedule of one-to-ones that's the same for everybody? Do you flex it depending on the individual and what they need? Kind of, if it is standard, what does that look like for you? I mean, this is some of the real nitty-gritty stuff that, again, I think people are going to be really interested in.
Yeah, so I try to make sure, Ben, that I have at least an hour every 2 weeks with every individual. So I have, right now I have five direct reports. So with each of them, I will have at least an hour every 2 weeks. And as I said, I'll definitely ring fence the beginning of that meeting for our well-being and coaching part of the discussion. But also in terms of my extended and wider team, it's probably a bit more ad hoc, and it will be, on the drive in when I was driving in, but on dog walks, or just kind of an opportunity to kind of speak on the phone and to have a discussion as a follow-up to something that happened in the week. So for me, I think it's about having that clearly defined schedule and rhythm in terms of those one-to-ones, but also being very adaptive and ad hoc and having discussions, especially when people have had the time to reflect, and also it can feel a bit more natural. You know, it can feel a lot more natural to have a discussion outside of a allocated one-to-one meeting slot. And then, and again, especially if you're early in your coaching journey with that individual, quite often that's probably the quickest way for barriers to come down and for honesty to really come through.
Yeah, like I couldn't agree more, Tech. I mean, that's a really sort of powerful approach, isn't it? Kind of the ring-fenced kind of structure, so people know there's absolutely the time, but really supplementing that with kind of the ad hoc conversations, the ability, as you described so brilliantly, especially for the internal thinkers to be able to come back to you kind of later once they have had a chance to process. Yeah, I think just think that's so powerful. The other thing I wanted to ask, based on what you said 10 minutes ago or so, you mentioned keeping electronic notes and circulating those. Do you have a formal sort of process where at the start of the next session you'll review and check through those, or do you kind of leave that with the individual as their accountability? What does that piece look like?
What I find, Ben, is that it depends on the individual. So even within my current team, I know that I have individuals who will study those notes and who will come to the next one-to-one with a structure. They will propose the structure that they want to talk through and cover off, and some will have PowerPoint slides, and some will just be a bit more of a kind of a verbal update. But for me, I think those notes, it's important to share them, as I said earlier on, but predominantly for me, especially when you're in such a fast-paced environment, it's so important for me to read those before I go into that room and into that meeting. So just to kind of refresh and remind myself of what we talked to last time, what were the key things that we're talking to? So for me, it's not necessarily around kind of poring over those as a respective, you know, a retrospective afterwards, but more of a reminder and a kind of a capture of, yep, this is what we said we were going to do, and these are the important things. And I also, by the way, integrate, clearly there's the coaching elements in those notes at the beginning, but I also capture the work aspects and the work delivery. And by having them all together, you're not marginalizing on anything. You're bringing them together and keeping that interaction, if you like, on those notes, all encompassing and relevant to your day to day as well as the journey that you're on together. So it's about for me, it's about just making sure that we're both really clear before we get into the room. But how that individual treats those notes, I think, varies in terms of individual style.
Yeah, great. And what would you say, Teg, to those people who perhaps are listening to our conversation and have been slightly triggered by it, in so much as they're now sitting there thinking, flipping heck, I'd love to take the approach that Teg's talking about, but blimey, I just do not have the time. I just haven't got the time. There's so much going on. If only I could have a hour and a half one-to-one with my direct reports every 2 weeks, that would be amazing. Like, what do you say to those people who are struggling to see how they could actually make this work because of the pressures of a busy, fast-paced business or job?
As a director of as I said, 7 different business areas in an environment like the one I'm in terms of fast-paced industry, I get that. And I think I've had many individuals throughout my career call out the same. But I think very quickly, it became apparent to me, and hopefully it becomes apparent to them as individuals, is that the more you invest in this, the better you prepare in those one-to-ones, the better you are more effective in helping people understand and recognize the behaviors that they need to exhibit to be successful, not just the KPIs, but the behaviors of how to kind of create success, will mean that your team just becomes far more efficient, high-performing, far more capable and aligned to your vision around what success looks like. And so, of course, in the short term, there's a significant amount of time investment, a significant amount of energy that goes into that, and for all parties involved, to be clear. But the payback is phenomenal. And countless times, over and over again, I see the fact that by investing in this, by driving this structured and clear and developmental path for those that you're working with, the efficiency, the morale, the opportunities for that individual and the business is just amplified. And that creates more time and more opportunity to further invest. You know, it's not most definitely not a false economy. It's most definitely a critical aspect in being successful and realizing the potential that you have within your team.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with everything that you've just said, Teg. Like, it's absolutely, it's an investment, isn't it? You're investing the time up front, and to start with, it does feel like more effort and more time up front, but I do believe quite quickly you really start to see that investment repaid, right, in terms of productivity, performance, in engagement, probably quicker than most of us think, I believe. And Teg, for those people listening, who are now sort of motivated, inspired to maybe switch up their approach a little bit and give this a go, what would you suggest from your experience are perhaps the first two steps they could take on this journey to adopting much more of a coaching, supportive, mentoring type style as a leader?
I would suggest two steps. There's a challenge there, Ben. I'll give you three or four, I think, that occur to me. One is you have to prepare for your one-to-ones. You know, successful coaching is not about that 30 minutes or that hour, whatever the time is that you've allocated to that individual. It's about reflecting ahead of that period. So, you know, that doesn't have to be at a desk. It's not about kind of carving out more time out from your day necessarily, but it's around when you're on the dog walk or if you're driving or whatever that is, a just kind of conscious reflection of the individuals that you're lucky enough to have working with you and where the focus areas are, if you like, before you get into those one-to-ones and capturing that, as I said. So for me, it's the first one is definitely prepare for your one-to-ones, not just at your desk, but in terms of that mental space. A second one for me would be, you know, I've been lucky enough to work in a number of corporate environments, and most environments will have some type of individual development plan, you know, that you work through with your management. In many environments, I've seen colleagues who kind of look at this individual development plan as a company admin or a task to get out of the way. But what is very obvious are where leaders value that personal development plan and take them seriously. So that would be my second tip, which is, again, back to that kind of investment of energy and time and in terms of reward and realizing that individual development plans, the more you can put into that as a coach, the more you can give to what's the skill sets and what's the areas that an individual needs to work on, the greater the impact to your team, the greater the efficiency and greater the opportunity to have a high performing team. I touched earlier on as well as part of that, and in terms of, you know, when you set business objectives, my third tip would be business objectives should include behaviors, not just KPIs. You know, so it's not just about delivering something and a smart objective, but it's about how you want that individual to deliver that objective. You know, what's the approach and what's the right way for that individual to not only to deliver it, but also to take the right learnings along that path. And not so much of a tip, maybe as a motivation, but my kind of, I guess my final point in response to your question is, on a personal level as a coach, if you reflect and recognize the greatest leaders that you've ever had the opportunity of working with and have had the biggest impact on you personally in your career, break down why they had that impact. You know, break down exactly what made them great for you, and then whether those are learnings that you can take in terms of becoming a coach, and most definitely take as a motivation for developing and building and driving the people around you.
Amazing. Fantastic list of tips there, Teg. Thank you. I guess to finish up properly, maybe one, possibly two, slightly more quickfire questions to finish on a completely different tack. The first one is a question I love to ask every guest who comes on the show. What would you say are the one or two books that you've read that have had the biggest impact upon you, whether that's to do with your coaching style or about something different entirely? What would those one or two books be, Tech?
Well, actually, Ben, I'm probably more inclined to kind of snack on TED Talks and and kind of online articles and that sort of thing. And then also, when it comes to kind of those sorts of TED Talks and online content, it's great when you can forward it on, particularly when you know you have them in your library, as it were, that you then share with individuals that you're working with that are relevant within context. But I have to say, as always, you know, I think the Harvard Business Review, I read recently the 10 must reads on leadership. I thought that was very good. There were some points that were very new to me and I really took on board, and others that I didn't necessarily agree with, but really thought provoking. I thought that was good. And I'm currently reading a book called Think Again by Adam Grant. And I don't know if you know much about that book, but I would recommend that for everyone who's in a position of power and you know, within any environment, because it's all about embracing alternative views and thoughts, but most importantly, embracing when you get things wrong, you know, and getting things wrong is an affirmation that you've learned something, as opposed to you failed. So I think that's a great book and one that's definitely resonated for me.
And final question, Tech, is there a particular productivity hack or way of working or structuring your day that you use that you can share with listeners?
For me, it's partly the electronic notes. I think moving from kind of paper-based notes to electronic notes is a big gain, particularly when you're, you know, even in the kind of working from home environment, when you're in different, you know, aspects of your life, when you're trying to make a mental note or anything else, being able to capture that on your phone or on your tablet or on your laptop, and having the ability to search those notes efficiently and bring them to the forefront when you're in a relevant kind of meeting context, that for me, I think, is the, you know, that transition of going from paper to electronic notes is probably the biggest. And then for me, it would be prioritizing my actions on the good old urgent, not urgent, and important, not important matrix, you know, in terms of when I first started that approach, it was a bit of a manual process around 10 years ago. I'd have to kind of go through my tasks and think about that carefully, but it's become natural behavior for me. And I think reprioritizing, reorganizing your day based on the latest around those kind of matrix is a massive efficiency gain.
Amazing. Tech, thank you so much for your time today and sharing your insights and getting super tactical and granular with us around kind of how you structure your one-to-ones and your approach. I think it would be really interesting and really useful for so many people. I guess final question, if anybody wants to get in touch with you, connect with you to learn more, perhaps what's the best way for people to do that?
Absolutely. Welcome to LinkedIn is probably the best route, Ben, just to look me up on there.
Amazing. Tech, thank you so much for your time. Whatever you're going on to do next, hope you have a great day.
You too. Take care of yourself.
I hope you enjoyed this episode, folks. But most importantly, I really hope that you are able to go away and make some small positive changes as a result of what you've just heard. And now here are the details of that offer that I mentioned in the introduction. Two of my fantastic previous guests on the show, Dr. Vicky Barnes and Carola Becker, have kindly offered a 15% discount to listeners of this show on their ski retreat to Colorado in January 2022. This exclusive package, this exclusive retreat, includes luxury accommodation, a private nutritionally focused chef who'll be working closely with Carola, skiing in Colorado's famous champagne powder, yoga, meditation, along with having constant access to Vicky and Carola and having them on hand to talk about positive psychology, nutrition, and well-being. It really is the ideal reset after a really challenging period, and is brought to you by Carola and Dr. Vicky, who run a series of award-winning retreats. All of the details and your exclusive discount code are in the show notes, folks, should you want to take a look, and I really encourage you to do so. And finally, if you're enjoying the show, please do rate, review and subscribe on iTunes, as it enables us to keep bringing you more and more fantastic interviews with great leaders and subject matter experts. And do also go to www.ben-morton.com to check out my website and learn more about how I may be able to support you and your team. That's it for this episode, folks. See you in the next one very soon. Lead on.